fan. On demand. Log on to Sportsnet590.ca. Sign up to automatically receive the latest reports, features, and Fan 590 show highlights.
Cliff Floyd will be along at 10:40. He is a former Major League outfielder, current analyst on the MLB Network and Sirius XM. And he's developed a, along with his partners at Spark Innovations, the ball cap liner. It is a protective liner that weighs about 4 ounces, will go under baseball caps. And I just sent out on Twitter a picture of it, modeled by my lovely and talented producer, J.D. Bunkus. And I realized when I sent out the picture, I hope we put it on the right way. No, we did. We put it on the right way. It's actually kind of funny because you know what? I'm going to bring Jeff Merrick in. He's host of Hockey Central and co-host of Merrick versus Wyshynski, because Mr. Merrick, you must have played baseball, right?
I played High Park Little League, of course.
Do you remember now? And I may be aging myself here. Do you remember the helmets or the safety gear they used to give you when you got on first base, and you'd take your batting helmet off, and it was almost like an old, it was almost like one of those old hockey helmets. It just kind of went around the ears and around the back.
Yep, I got that. I think it's funny because I played on Greg O'Halloran's team.
Okay.
Of course, you know, Greg and I played together at High Park. Yeah, I remember those. I remember those specifically, but I almost seem to remember, I think we had some positional players as well that may have used those helmets too.
Yes. You know what? I think, and now I'm trying to think, I think first baseman or third baseman might have worn them as well. But anyhow,
I think, when you first started the hot corner, because, you know, you sneak in a few feet.
Exactly.
You have screamers down the line. I think when we first started, we were 8 or 9 years old, I think, Jeff. I think that's when you saw those helmets.
Anyhow, this thing is actually very close to that. It's almost a similar design. Anyhow, we'll talk about it with Cliff Floyd later on. I want to talk to you about a numbers game, which will air on Sportsnet Ontario, Pacific, West, and East this Thursday at 7 p.m. And it is one of our Sportsnet NHL specials. It's a 30-minute special examining the origin and growth of analytics and how they work. And, of course, you will have interviews with Kyle Dubas and Tyler DeLow, who is the Oilers analytic specialist. Jeff, how long do you think this debate will go on in hockey about analytics? Are we getting to the point where the tone of the debate is going to change and kind of the digging in of heels on both sides is going to give way and people are going to sit down and look at this? And you know, we had this discussion because I ran into you and Tyler, and I always tell people, and I mean, I've talked to you as well, it's the same thing in baseball. After a while, everybody looked at it and said, some of these things are good, some of these things aren't so good,
100%.
And it, you know, the argument's over.
Yeah, I think we're already there with this era of analytics right now. Corsi and Fenwick and PDO, some of the hot button terms. You know, I think that those ideas have gone through their war. And I think all, whether we're talking about sports, whether we're talking about philosophy, whether we're talking about quantum mechanics, I think all new ideas need to go through a battle. And they need to be tested. And they need to get beaten up. And yes, people dig in their heels and pick a side and start swinging for the fences. And I think, you know, I think the possession stats right now in hockey have gone through that battle. And I think this summer, as it's been called, you know, the summer of analytics, is the finish line for this era of hockey statistics. Now, this is not to say that, you know, 5 years from now and 10 years from now, we'll look back at this era and we'll say, you know what, this was just hockey stats, you know, super stats in its infancy. We have a much more sophisticated way to look at the game. And I think that's what we'll do. You know, you go back to late 60s, early 70s, plus minus was a scary and, at you know, often baffling concept for people. And what you'll see on the special tomorrow, one of the things that I did, excuse my hockey geekdom, but I went to the NHL and we said, you know, give us your earliest game sheet. Like the NHL started in 1917, but the earliest game sheet that they have at the NHL is in 1922. It's a game in December between the St. Pat's and the Canadiens. It's a 7-2 final for Toronto. But interesting on it, there are 9 goals, but only 2 assists that are given out. And at the top of the game sheet, it says, attention official scorers, make sure to note assists on as many goals as possible. Meaning, once upon a time, Jeff, assists were considered a fancy stat in hockey. And as we've seen before, you know, and you know this with your baseball background, because, you know, baseball really is, you know, the genesis of a lot of these things, where the ideas came from. Every stat sits on the shoulder of stats that came before. Mm-hmm. And this is that progression from, you know, assists being a novel concept to plus minus, and now Rindacorsi and Fenwick and PDO.
Jeff Merrick joins us on the Jeff Blair Show. I guess the thing that might separate Kyle Dubas from some of the other guys, and I don't know them all off the top of my head, but the thing that would separate Kyle Dubas is he seems to be positioned, whether it's by Brendan Shanahan or Tim Lewicki or whomever, he seems to be positioned to take over eventually as GM of a team, whereas some of the other guys, and no disrespect to them, but some of the other guys are you know, they're going to be analytics guys. That'll probably be the extent of their NHL career. They're going to be analytics guys.
I think for the most part, you're right. I would I think the one exception might be Dello in Edmonton.
Okay.
Because he's sort of become, I mean, he just doesn't sort of sit in a corner and crunch numbers. He's, you know, the position that he has sees him involved in pretty much all facets of the organization. I can't speak for Tyler, but he's a smart guy. He's a lawyer. He knows his stuff. He can communicate well. He isn't shy about confrontation. Really, when you break down what his skill set is, and no, he's not your quote-unquote traditional hockey guy. He never, you know, shot frozen cow patties off the side of a barn in Kelowna, never played in the Western League, and never banged it out in the minors and had a 5 or 6 year career in the NHL. But I think we're starting to see the end of that phase of general manager. I can kind of see Tyler somewhere down the road actually running an NHL team. I can't speak to the others, Eric Tulsky and these types of guys, but I can see Dello doing it.
Is Dubas in a different position than the others, though? Because it is Toronto, he's got, I don't know if we can call David Nonis a lame duck GM, but let's just say he's got a GM who's under pressure. I think we can agree on that. He's got a GM who's under pressure. And, you know, Kyle's a good-looking guy. He's well-spoken. He clearly enjoys the support of Brendan Shanahan. He would seem to be in a little more sensitive position than some of these other guys.
Yeah, he is. He's in a much more powerful position, I think, than anybody else who got hired this summer, whether it's, you know, who the Devils hired, who the Florida Panthers hired, who Edmonton hired, or any other team that now has an analytics department. I mean, Kyle comes into it, you know, as someone who was born into hockey culture in Sault Ste. Marie. His grandfather ran the Greyhounds program for a number of years. He was an agent with Uptown. So he's sort of been, you know, marinating in hockey culture his entire year. I know he's pretty sensitive about being pigeonholed as the analytics guy.
Mm-hmm.
And for good reason, because I don't think you want to get pinned into just being able to do one thing or talk about one thing. And the one thing that Dubas does is he values analytics and sees value in it, but also, you know, values the eyeball test and understands that a lot of what happens in hockey, since we're playing on cold ice with a rubber puck, a lot of it is just luck. And I don't think that he thinks you can read a hockey game simply by reading an advanced stat sheet. I think that he still understands that you need to go on gut instinct, whether it's in free agency, whether it's a trade deadline, whether it's at the draft. But he does see value in this new progression of advanced stats. And, you know, uses sports like basketball and soccer as his touchstone or his reason for finding value in them. And in a lot of ways, and he mentions this in the piece you'll see on Thursday, he says, you know, this is analytics in its infancy right now. You know, you look at what basketball is doing, you look at what soccer is doing, and the criticism that has always been raised about hockey is, well, you know what, it works for baseball because it's more of a static sport.
Mm-hmm.
This is a more flowing sport. Well, look at the work that they're doing in soccer in Europe. It's remarkable when it comes to analytics, and ditto for basketball as well. And the one thing that Kyle does in the piece you'll see tomorrow is talks about the similarities between soccer and hockey and why analytics work for both.
The show is called A Numbers Game. It will air on Sportsnet Ontario, Pacific West and East at 7 p.m. Jeff Merrick, host of
Accenture. Can I shoot something in here real quick, Jeff?
Yep.
It's not. I assure you, if you're going to tune in, it's not a math class. Don't be scared.
There'll be no test at the end. There'll be no test at the
no.
end. Merrick, I know you too well. You're going to have fun with this. I know you're going to have fun with this.
You got to see this great viz that Mark Askin found from Hockey Night in Canada in the 60s, Ward Cornell, in this piece where they run in these very primitive HAL-like computers from 2001, Space Odyssey, running predictive charts on how the NHL season is going to finish up. It is hilarious. And there's Ward Cornell standing in front of this big glass with all these, you know, women with these punch cards that are being filled out, sort of tongue-in-cheek way of trying to predict using a computer back in the late 60s how the NHL season is going to fare. So, yes, there is plenty of humor. Some of it's tongue-in-cheek. and a lot of it's just good old guffaws. And one of the pieces that I really like, too, Damian Cox had a sit-down with Ron Smith, who was the right-hand man for Roger Nielsen,
right,
who was, I mean, we think of Roger as Captain Video, but if you're around today, he'd probably be called Captain Corsi. I mean, he had he had Ron, you know, measuring scoring chances, and what we sort of know now as the birth of possession stats, who had the puck, what did they do with the puck, and charted it all after every single game. So that's a fascinating piece and a fascinating look at what analytics were in the 70s, when literally you had one of your guys sitting in the stands with a piece of paper and a pen following players and checking off boxes.
Are we getting to the point, Jeff, where analytics, where some of these new stats will be used as a means of arguing a player's financial value? And the reason I ask that is because in baseball, Scott Boras is famous every year for showing up at the winter meetings with this huge, you know, dozens and dozens of pages of statistical breakdown of whatever the free agent du jour is.
Yeah.
And but at the same time, if you go into a baseball arbitration hearing, it's nuts and bolts. It's home runs, RBIs, batting average, fielding percentage, a lot of the quote-unquote older stats. Are we at a point where the newer stats will be used not just to judge the value of a player in terms of his abilities, but to judge the financial worth of a player as well? Are we getting near that point, do you think?
It's a great question. I think it's something the NHL is sensitive about. Like, when you look at, you know, all the websites that are out there, Gabe Desjardins, behindthenet.ca is a big one. Extra Skater, I mean, Daryl just got, you know, absorbed by the MLSE machine, so that website's down. But there's a number of analytics sites out there. And did you ever wonder why the NHL lets other people dine out on their information? Like, why not just create their own analytics
Great
site
point.
Themselves, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I think the reason is what you're talking about, Jeff, is when you go to arbitration, you're only allowed to use numbers that are made public by the NHL. And I think in the NHL's mind, if they start to introduce and even a new couple of columns on the wrap-ups after games, that opens up a whole new can of worms when it comes time to arbitration, because now, all of a sudden, you know, if you're the agent for someone who's going to arbitration, now you have a whole new arsenal of information you can use to get your player more money. I think that's one of the reasons why the NHL is so concerned about allowing these stats to be published on their website and are only too happy to let other people dine out on their information.
Well, it sounds like it's going to be an interesting piece. You mentioned soccer as well, and I know that soccer is just going through an absolute boom in stats. OptiStats, and next year, of course, in baseball, they've got the new camera set up. They're going to use at every ballpark that will actually be able to track how far a player moves on any particular play. I mean, this is where it's all going.
Yeah, and here's the sensitivity we have when it comes to presenting hockey this year at the start of the 12-year package with the NHL. This has to become part of the vocabulary. This has to become part of the conversation. But how much is too much, and how much of an appetite do hockey fans have for new numbers and new ways of thinking about the game? You know, it's pretty tempting to say, you know what, let's just break it down statistically, and even if it's a foreign concept, it's right, and we need to throw in all these numbers. But there's a pretty strong tune-out factor for a casual viewer when you start introducing concepts that you really don't have. So there's a sensitivity I know that, you know, all the producers have, and certainly our exec Mitch Kirzner has, as to how much is too much. I think the goal is using these stats to tell stories that people can relate to, whether it's with zone entries or zone starts or possession numbers. But I know that, you know, speaking from a TV point of view, there's a real sort of sensitive balance that we're going through right now as we start this new relationship with the NHL. How much is too much, knowing full well that these things do need to be discussed and debated and massaged and beaten up at the same time when we present hockey this year?
Well, I know that from some of the meetings we've had with people that storytelling is going to be the most important facet of Rogers. Of our hockey coverage this year, and I'm looking forward to this. This is going to be a tasty intro to it, Jeff. I really appreciate you doing this.
It should. Can I get a quick plug in for Sportsnet.ca? Someone, if you
absolutely
someone you really should follow, sort of that next wave of analytics writers we have on our website, and that's Stephen Birch. This guy goes to deep water fast.
Mm-hmm.
If you are into this, go to sportsnet.ca and do a search on Stephen Birch, because he takes you and drags you into deep water quick, and it is lengthy and it is thorough. If you're into this stuff, check out Birch on sportsnet.ca.
Good stuff, Jeff. Thanks for doing this.
Thanks, bud.
Take care. That is Jeff Merrick. He's host of Hockey Central. He is co-host of Merrick versus Wyshynski. You can follow him on Twitter at Jeff Merrick. And he will host a numbers game, which will air on Sportsnet Ontario, Pacific, West, and East this Thursday at 7 p.m. It's a 30-minute special examining the origin and growth of analytics and how they work. And it's going to be fun. It's not going to be like math class. Trust me. I know Merrick. Merrick doesn't do anything unless he can have fun doing it. You don't want to miss it. It's a brave new world, but you know what? It's a fun new world as well. Ken Campbell is a senior writer and columnist at The Hockey News. You can follow him at THN Ken Campbell on Twitter. Ken has delved into the wonderful world of the Columbus Blue Jackets in his most recent work. Ken, thanks for joining us. Jarmo Kekäläinen and John Davidson certainly aren't afraid to, they're certainly not afraid to draw, well, actually not draw a line in the sand. They've basically built a wall in the sand around Ryan Johansson, haven't they?
Yeah, they took the TNT to the bridge and blew it up.
They didn't only do that. They widened the river. They put sharks in it. They made sure all the boats had holes in it.
Oh yeah, they went after him pretty well in the last couple of days. As it turns out, on Monday, Jarmo Kekäläinen sort of basically had made some allusions to Ryan Johansson's agent, Kurt Overhart, as you know, wanting to set a record, hit a home run, that kind of thing, which you know raised some eyebrows and thought, you know, you thought, okay, well, there's a bit of bad blood here. But last night, John Davidson, I mean, he just took the can of kerosene and just threw it all over the fire. And it was funny because Aaron Portsline of the Columbus Dispatch and I were chatting with JD, and basically I just said to John, I said, listen, John, do you want to say anything about the situation with Ryan Johansson? And that was pretty much it.
Turn the tape recorder on.
Turn your tape recorder on and get out of the way, because he was just he just went off, and I don't know if people have seen it, but he said it was extortion, it was nonsensical. You know, he's trying to get everybody fired in the organization. You know, it was a very, very personal attack, and just, you know, just for the sake of background, Ryan Johansson obviously is a restricted free agent, has no arbitration rights, and they're trying to do a 2-year bridge deal that the Blue Jackets are offering in the neighborhood of $3.5 million a year, which they think is very reasonable. And Johansson's camp and his agent, Kurt Overhart, have shot a little higher. They've shot for $6.5 million. So there's a huge gap here, and they actually opened camp today with Media Day, so he's not going to be around for a while unless somebody backs down a little bit here.
You know, Ken, it's remarkable. Look, I have no problem with the push and pull of labor negotiations, the push and pull of contract negotiations. It's all part of the game. We all get that. But it has, in the past couple of years, it's surprised me how players don't realize that in the position Ryan Johansson's in, you really don't have an option. You're going to get your payday eventually. Everybody does for the most part, unless, quite frankly, their career doesn't determine it or shows that they don't deserve it. And yet, it still seems to be a flashpoint. And it's like hitting your head against the wall. You know what it's like? It's like a baseball player in salary arbitration knowing that he isn't eligible for free agency for 3 years and fretting because he's going to get $450,000 instead of $650,000. You have no choice.
Right. Well, he does have some leverage, and the only leverage he has is to withhold his services, which appears he's going to do.
Right, but that's...
And the thing is, though, with Columbus, though, they're trying to build something here. He's the number one center, scored 30 goals last year. He's a 6'4", 230-pound guy. You know, I mean, so if let's just say for the sake of argument, he sits out training camp, they start the season, and he's not there, and Columbus goes, you know, 5-10-3 to start the season. Well, then, you know, the leverage moves over to his court because he says, hey, look, guys, you know, I mean, obviously you're not the same team without me that you are with me. So let's pony up with the money here. But that's the only leverage he has. And I mean, Davidson made a fairly good point last night. He said, you know, I mean, it's right there in the CBA. You know, I mean, the players take us to the woodshed when they have all the leverage, and this guy wants to take us to the woodshed when they have no leverage. But I mean, the fact remains, it's still he still has the right to be able to ask whatever he thinks he's worth. And just because this contract has never been awarded before doesn't mean that he has no right to ask for it. So,
true.
I mean, this is going to get done. I don't know when it's going to get done. It looks like it's going to be a while. It looks like there's going to be some bad blood, and it looks like they're going to have to smooth things over. But sooner or later, like Doug Armstrong, the GM of the St. Louis Blues, said, he was talking about Jaden Schwartz, and they're trying to do the same thing. They're trying to get a deal done with him. And he basically said, you know, I've never heard of a 21- or 22-year-old player retiring. So these guys are going to end up playing, and it's just a matter of letting the process sort of play itself out.
Ken Campbell, senior writer and columnist for the Hockey News. You can follow him on Twitter at THN Ken Campbell. Another item that those of us in Toronto, I think, are following with a certain degree of interest, probably more so than any other city other than Detroit, is the status of Mike Babcock and his negotiations or non-negotiations with Ken Holland and the Wings. Ken, you know as well as I do that every Leafs fan in Toronto is praying that Mike Babcock is the head coach of the Maple Leafs next year. What do you think the odds are that he leaves the Wings?
Well, I hate to bail on this, but I'd have to say 50-50 right now because, you know, like I said, you know, like I wrote, there are times I think that he and Ken Holland are just sitting back chuckling and going, yeah, let's play this out a little more and make people squirm. And then there's other times when I'm convinced he's thinking of leaving. Like, I've talked to people in the organization, and they have no idea. Some of them think he's going to go. Some of them think he's going to stay. I don't think Mike Babcock knows what he's going to do right now. But I did talk to somebody in the Red Wings last night, a fairly high executive, who said, and I say this because I don't want to cause any kind of frenzy, but he said that, in his opinion, Babcock will leave because he loves the big stage, and there's no bigger stage than in Toronto. You know, so that's just sort of something to keep thinking about. He's got a great situation in Detroit. He knows the organization. He's been there for 10 years. But, hey, maybe he wants to move on and try something new. And to me, it's a very interesting and it's a really neat dynamic because there are no NFL type coaches in the NHL, like the guys that make the big money. You know, I think Joel Quenneville's at $2.5 million, and I believe he's the highest paid coach in the league. You know, and my point is, if John Tortorella's worth $2 million, this year for doing nothing, what is Mike Babcock worth? Like, are we going to see the first $4 to $5 million coach in the NHL? And if, you know, if an organization is willing to put up that kind of money, and they should be if they really believe they want this guy, because you don't have a salary cap on coaching,
right?
Then it's probably a pretty good investment.
And is Mike Babcock, is he the type of guy who would need a title in addition to head coach? You know, would he have to be head coach and director of hockey operations, or head coach and general manager, or is Mike Babcock the guy just happy being the coach?
I get the sense that he probably wouldn't need, you know, especially if he's in a big market. I don't think he'd need those levers of power. I mean, he works pretty well with the people. Like he and Ken Holland work great together, and regardless of how this thing plays out, they've had a great relationship. They've never been at loggerheads. They've always been on the same page. So I think Mike, as long as he can coach and he has a chance to win, I would get the sense that he probably would be okay with that. I mean, it's really difficult now to hold more than one responsibility in an organization. I mean, even, you know, there are no GM coaches left in the league. I mean, it used to be fairly common that the guy was the GM and the coach. I mean, that's it's almost impossible to do that now.
Ken, it was good of you to join us today. Thanks as always.
Yeah, no trouble.
That's Ken Campbell. He is a senior writer and columnist at The Hockey News. You can follow him on Twitter at THN Ken Campbell. He's got a terrific item up on the Columbus Blue Jackets and that's not a soap opera surrounding the negotiations with Ryan Johansson. It is what it is. It's the world of NHL negotiations, similar in some ways to what the Leafs went through with Nazem Kadri and what the Canadiens went through with PK Subban, although I don't remember the verbiage coming from the team being on the same level as John Davidson and Jarmo Kekalainen's words yesterday. John Davidson is saying that Ryan Johansson and his agent, that their demands amount to extortion, which is a pretty loaded word. Nonetheless, we all know how this is going to play out. Ryan Johansson's going to hold out for a while. He's going to come back and he'll play for what the Columbus Blue Jackets are willing to offer him. I guess the only concern I would have here is it's one thing when you have this type of a situation in a bigger market with a more established team. And I'm not going to get into an argument about whether the Blue Jackets are better in terms of talent than the Leafs, you know, to draw the comparison between Nazem Kadri and all that, or whether they're better in talent than the Canadians were last year to draw the comparison with PK Subban. But what I'm talking about is the Columbus Blue Jackets. That's, I don't know if you'd call it a tenuous market, but it's a market that it's a team that's really on the up and up. It's a team that has a tremendous, and an organization that has a tremendous sense of forward momentum. They're fun to watch. There's kind of a neat little thing happening there. And that you wonder how a situation like this impacts on that type of a developing situation. This is a team that really is still trying to make its history. It's a team that's still trying to establish its moorings as a hockey franchise. That's a little different than when a team like Montreal or Toronto or somebody else goes through one of these discussions with restricted free agents. And that, to me, is what makes it even more fascinating, because I would argue that there's way, way more. And I think Ken Campbell referred to this. There's a lot more at stake for the team with this particular player than there are in some of the situations, or than there were in some of the situations with RFAs we've seen before. There's much more at stake with Ryan Johansson for the Columbus Blue Jackets. I sent out a picture on Twitter of the ball cap liner. This is a protective headgear that Cliff Floyd and his partners at Spark Innovations have developed in effort to make players safer from head injuries. It fits under baseball caps. It weighs around 4 ounces. We have one in here. It's really light. It is really light. Kendall Graveman of the Blue Jays tried it after a Jays game last week, said he found it light and comfortable. And it really doesn't appear to be too intrusive, actually. We've tried it on here, and it doesn't appear to be too intrusive at all. Cliff Floyd's going to join us. We're going to discuss the ball cap liner. This is, well, I think it's something, frankly, it's something that I think is going to be a regular part of baseball equipment very, very soon. There will, of course, have to be an evolutionary process in the development of the device, but we're going towards that direction. It's like anything else. You're never going to be able to give athletes 100% protection. But if you can mitigate, if you can give the one guy out of 10 who gets a ball off the head a little bit of protection, then it's worth it. That's like anything else. If it's comfortable, players will wear it. If it isn't comfortable, they won't. There is an element of, does it look cool or not? I admit. I mean, nobody wants to look like a Martian when they're out in the field. But like I said, it's certainly lightweight, and it certainly appears to be not all that intrusive. Cliff Floyd will join us to discuss the ball cap liner. And I'm sure we'll be able to get Cliff to talk a little baseball as well. All that ahead in the Jeff Blair Show on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Prices like no other, from a club like no other, The Fan Club. Log on to Sportsnet590.ca. Now more of the Jeff Blair Show on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
All right, we are back. Mark Malone of Westwood One, one of their NFL experts, will join us at 11 o'clock. Gord Stellick and Mark Osborne will be in studio as well. A little bit of breaking news out of Ottawa. According to the Ottawa Sun, the Ottawa Senators have or are about to offer Bobby Ryan a 7-year contract. So we'll deal with that, and we'll take a look at the Leafs as well. Michael McCann of Sports Illustrated will join us at 11:40, and we'll continue discussing Ray Rice's suspension. We will carry the Minnesota Vikings news conference live, by the way, at noon. We will have Baseball Central at noon, but for the first 20 minutes or so, we will go to the Vikings media conference that will be held live in Minneapolis. It'll be owner Ziggy Wilf and owner Mark Wilf, and they will be talking about Adrian Peterson, who has effectively been suspended from the rest of the season, ordered to stay away from the team, still making about $690,000 a week during the course of his suspension. So he'll have some walking around money, is what I'm saying. He'll have some walking around money. Michael McCann will join us as a lead up to that. And then at 12:40, Dan Duquette, Vice President of Baseball Operations for the American League East champion Baltimore Orioles, the newly crowned American League East champion Baltimore Orioles, will join us at 12:40. So I'm holding this thing in my hands, the ball cap liner that Sparks Innovation Incorporated has developed. It's a 4-ounce, and it's very light, 4-ounce liner that would go underneath a baseball cap and provide protection around the temple and at the front of the forehead. It would fit under the cap. And the idea being, as we talked about before the break, you can't encase guys in armor. There's always a chance somebody's going to get hurt. There's always a chance that a line drive is going to go back and smack somebody in the face. There's nothing you can do about it. But what this piece of gear does is it at least protects the forehead and the temple and increases the likelihood of a pitcher or a player for that matter. But I think we're talking largely pitcher. It increases the likelihood of a pitcher surviving a line drive to the head. Kevin Barker, who played in the majors, as you well know, just walked into the studio, and he tried it on. And Barker said he liked it. Barker said he would consider wearing it. Cliff Floyd, former MLB outfielder, now a current analyst with the MLB Network and SiriusXM, is one of the developers of this. And Cliff Floyd joins us on the Jeff Blair Show. How you doing, Cliff?
JB, what's going on, man?
Lots going on. I want to talk to you about baseball in a minute, but I also want to talk to you about this the headgear here. And I was making the point, I was thinking about this before you came on. I mean, you know that I covered the game where you suffered that hand injury. You're never going to be able to protect everybody all the time in any sport, but this seems to have potential to at least mitigate against one area of injury, doesn't it?
Yeah, and that was my focus, JB. When I actually thought about this, I had seen enough this year. You know, when you think about, you know, the guys that got hit, Cobb, you know, the guy in Toronto, Hap, going back to Brandon McCarthy, going back to, many more that wasn't so much the head or the brain, it was more the face, which you can't. You know, you can't protect unless you have a face mask on. But that was my angle, Jeff. And you know, and I just felt like, you know, we need to do something. And then, of course, we see the Isoblast come out, the one that Major League Baseball approved. But my main focus was to allow the guys to go out and have a sense of relief that they weren't at the disposal. For lack of better words, of a guy hitting the ball directly back at them being off balance and having no protection of something where you look at Giancarlo Stanton, okay, you get hit in the face and he can actually recover from that. He can actually recover from broken bones and you can get your teeth fixed, but you can't replace the brain.
Mm-hmm.
And that was my main focus when I actually thought about the BCL.
You know, when you look back at your playing days, high school and then through the minors and in the majors, You know, and I've talked to baseball players about this, and they'll say, mm-hmm. when you retire and you sit back and you watch the game, things come back to you like, man, you know, I remember a situation where I was that close to getting hit in the head, or things of that nature. You remember the serious concussions, all that stuff. It all comes back. Is there an incident you remember in particular that got you thinking about this?
Man, you know what? That's a great question. Man, it's a great point. It was many times. I mean, I remember back in Colorado that I can't think of the guy's name, Jeff, but I hit a rocket. I mean, an absolute bullet back up the middle. And I don't care if it was my 200 hit of the year.
Mm-hmm.
I'm so happy that guy caught that baseball, because it would have actually destroyed his face, mm-hmm. or destroyed his head. I went back and looked at the video, and I looked at it numerous times, and I almost told myself that, you know, it was one of those moments where you had to eliminate it from your mind. I kept saying, why you keep looking at this? And I knew why. It was like, I could have ended the man's life on the mound.
Mm-hmm.
Right here, I mean, literally right in front of my eyes. I mean, I was literally happy afterwards. Of course, you're upset when you first hit the ball. You're like, man, how you get your hand up, get out the way, and let the ball go up the middle.
Mm-hmm.
But when you go back and look at this baseball that went right back at him from 60 feet, six inches, I mean, an absolute rocket. And you think to yourself, man, these are the times, this is what I'm thinking about when I sit out here now in hindsight and look at my son play baseball, look at my daughter play softball, look at the other kids from the neighborhood playing baseball and doing things they love. And I look at the near misses, Jeff, that nobody even missed. Why even mentions or even see.
I see
it totally different.
Yeah, and this thing is light enough. Like, pitchers could wear this. You could wear it in the field, obviously, if you felt you needed extra protection.
Yeah.
It's not just pitcher specific, is it?
No, and I think that was my main focus. Is, of course, I want to eliminate what Doug Fister from the Nationals says. That, listen, when I wear this Isoblock, I'm not talking about Isoblock. Listen, anything. Well, I Nike, Under Armour, all it's different companies out there. It's a different, you know, different shows, different folks. My main focus is to what you just said, is to not just have it one dimensional, to not just have it on the pitchers, but to also have it as a first baseman,
mm-hmm.
also has it as a catcher. You know, these catchers are now starting to get concussions. Maybe I can take the brunt of that with the absorption of the D3L foam that I'm using. That is actually patented for that, and maybe take away that brunt of, you know, wow, I mean that knock you off your feet and shake you up type of hit that we've seen in the game. And, you know, some of these fields we see out there are not the best playing surfaces. So you take a bad hop and you take one to the head and out in the field, it could be the same as taking one back to the face or the head on the pitcher's mound.
Mm. Cliff Floyd joins us on the Jeff Blair Show. He, along with his partners at Spark Innovations, have developed the ball cap liner in an effort to mitigate head injuries. I said Kevin Barker, who played in the majors and minors, tried this on, and you know, he said, yeah, it's comfortable. He said, I'd wear it. You know, I'd get a hat that would fit over it. But it is comfortable, and I guess that's the first thing, isn't it? Comfort has to be a factor here as well as safety, because guys aren't going to put something on that they have to keep adjusting.
Never. And that's why, that's the reason I didn't attach it to the hat. That's the reason I made it less than 4 pounds. That's the reason I put the cloth, as you see, Jeff, inside of it to eliminate the pressure that goes along with some of these things that kids hate to wear. And then I went for, because in this day and age, you have to have a look.
Mm-hmm.
You can't have something that looks horrible or horrendous, you know, kids are not going to wear it. They're just not going to do it. You know, so I try to get the different look. And with the metal replacement plastic that I'm using, Jeff, you can change that color.
Mm-hmm.
You can make it red, black, blue, orange, pink, whatever color you want to go with your uniform to match up. And that, to me, is safety first. Look, the fact that it's very light. Less than 4 pounds will not allow your head to tilt in any direction.
Mm-hmm.
It allows you to do things you do on a daily basis.
Cliff Floyd joins us on the Jeff Blair Show. All right, but I would be remiss if I didn't let you go, or if I let you go without asking you about the Washington Nationals. I know I've already fired off an email to FP Santangelo about this. The Nationals winning the National League East.
Yeah.
They are, of course, the carryover, the Montreal Expos. I know Ian Desmond's the only guy they have who sort of has any Expos DNA with him. He was drafted by the Expos in their last year. Do you still have any feelings about that organization? Like, when you see the Nationals win, do you kind of get a good feeling about that?
I really do. As far as being able to go up to Montreal here and see the fan base and sort of see what they really are hoping to get back there, mm-hmm. in terms of getting a team back. Yeah, you know, it's one of those things that touches home, because you feel like this team today, Jeff, is something that we had back in '94 that has been a dynasty. You know what I mean? So you think about that.
Mm-hmm.
I think today, you know, today's team, when I look at it today, I just hope they realize that, you know, this is something that you don't play with. You sort of take it. And you ride it for as long as you can. That's the one thing I hope they take from this team, Justice, is you ride it as long as you can. You make this a dynasty, because the Nationals, as I see it today, is sort of made up just like the team we had back in the 90s, mm-hmm. at the Expos. I really look at this team the same way. I really look at the bullpen the same way. Of course, you might have more starters in with the Nationals as opposed to what we had in the 90s and 94. But you still had efficient guys back then, and you know, you had the star type quality players. But you know, to see that team not get the opportunity to become a dynasty, you don't want that. You don't want that to happen again. And that's why I look at this team and hope for it in the future.
Cliff, it's always good to talk to you. You continue to be well. Enjoy your work on the MLB Network, and this is a great little thing you guys have developed here, and I hope it goes very well.
No doubt, Jeff. You know, I mean, I'm trying to do this innovation thing. Now, I have a drywall axe as well that's in Canadian Tire. That's actually a maximum drywall axe. I mean, it's everything, like you said. When you sit back and do things, you know, in your retired career, man, it's so much fun to sit back and, you know, I was talking to my stepdad. He was like, listen, there's so much drama. He was helping me do my basement. And, you know, we came out with drywall axes 3-in-1.
You're a drywall guru now, man.
I'm telling you, go to Canadian Tire and get this thing, man. I'm telling you, it's amazing. It will make life easy if you're trying to renovate anything.
Oh, Cliff, you're too much, man. You continue to be well. Take care.
No doubt.
All right. Thanks, well. Cliff Floyd, designer of the ball cap liner, and apparently a drywall god as well. Drywall product available at Canadian Tire. All kidding aside, this ball cap liner looks pretty cool. And I sent out a tweet with a picture of it. And again, the company's name is Spark Innovations Inc. It is called the ball cap liner. You can go online, check it out. And if you got kids that play baseball, you may want to give it a look, because it is really light. And as Cliff Floyd said, it's designed to be comfortable, and it's designed to provide protection. We appreciate Cliff Floyd joining us. Mark Malone, former NFL quarterback, currently an analyst for Westwood One Sports, co-host of Under Center alongside Donovan McNabb, will join us to discuss the NFL. We'll talk a little Adrian Peterson, a little Ray Rice, but I promise you, we're going to talk about the on-field stuff as well. Michael McCann will join us at 11:40. We'll get back to the off-field stuff, and we will carry the Minnesota Vikings media conference live at noon, the first half of Baseball Central, and then at 12:40, Dan Duquette will join us. Don't go anywhere. This is the Jeff Blair Show, and this is Sportsnet 590, The Fan.